Hello everybody, we are back again with more coffee and more hot takes on films, classic and otherwise. So I'm Georgie.
Yeah, I'm Rachel.
And today we are here to give you our hot takes about a classic, I think we can say, Fight Club. What are you drinking?
I've just got some classic black filter coffee. It was the rest of the pot and I microwaved it because it was cold.
I respect that in the biggest way because I've literally got the dregs of a jar. I've got Nescafe Gold Blend.
Oh, yes, so then.
Not only do we give you great film takes, we also give you great coffee recommendations.
Yeah, so if we ever give you advice on coffee, don't take it.
Literally, right. We do like good coffee, I promise. I've got some gorgeous coffee downstairs, but...
Not for right now.
Not for right now. So, Fight Club.
Yes.
It's one of those films that, if you haven't seen, I don't know how. There will be spoilers in this discussion, by the way, so if you haven't seen Fight Club and you want to watch it and you don't want any spoilers, maybe kind of turn off after a little bit. We'll kind of be a little bit vague to start with, but yeah. There's going to be spoilers. It is one of those films, isn't it? Everyone seems to have seen. It's kind of like a meme film, you know?
Is it?
Yeah, it's, you know, don't talk about Fight Club.
Sure.
One of those, for sure. And I think it's one of those films, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, that I loved it when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was cool. Kind of like how I felt about Pulp Fiction when I was a teenager.
Okay.
And now I have different opinions. Give me your thought. I know, because you rewatched this really recently, didn't you?
Yeah, so, well, I only watched it for the first time really recently. I watched it for the first time in lockdown with a couple of buds over a voice chat kind of situation. We'd do it every night. We had a random number generator. They suggested films. I suggested films. And the night came off Fight Club. The first time around, I watched it. I gave it a 5-star out of 5 on Letterboxd. What was I doing?
That's how we picked this, by the way. We went through Rachel's letterbox and I was like, you gave 5 stars. Episode number 1.
Yes. But then, because we spoke about this and I gave it 5 stars, Georgie did not give it 5 stars. I was like, oh, let's talk about that then. I enjoyed the film, Georgie did not. And then I rewatched the film for this podcast episode. How did I rate this film? 5 stars. How?
The alternative title should be Georgie Ruins Everything for Everybody. Like, Jesus.
To be fair, on the record of our cinema trips, we've not had good ones so far.
We've had bad luck when we've been to, like, obviously, not recently, obviously.
No.
Yeah, we've had some bad luck. I will accept that.
So, do you just want to hop right into this one?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really eager to know why you changed your mind. Because you really enjoyed it the first time around.
Yeah.
On the first watch of it, I think I enjoyed it too, because on the face of it, it's a compelling film, you know? On the face of it, it's beautifully, really, really nicely shot, I think. The cinematography is really, really cool. The actors that you've got in it are fantastic as well, you know?
Absolutely.
And Chuck Palahniuk's book, Fight Club, as well. If you haven't, I'll be saying this a lot. If you haven't read the book, you should read it. It's really, really good. And I think it's one of those films that when you first watch it, you enjoy it, but then the more you watch it, you become more critical of it the more you watch it.
Yeah, I see that. I think after the initial kind of plot twist, like, because you are watching this film kind of being blissfully unaware, once a plot twist hits, it's like, oh, yo, that's what's happening. You re-look over the film in your brain, you're like, oh my god, this is so sick. And then you re-watch it, and then you see everything that is not good about the film. The plot twist blinded you, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that's like a really valid point because, I mean, it begs the question, our film was meant to be watched multiple times? Because it's obviously the case that if you expose yourself to something more frequently, you pick out the details and you look at things that you haven't looked at before. Yep. Some films are better on the second time around or the third time around. But then there are other films, I think, that sometimes it's intentional that there's stuff you see on the second time around that you didn't see the first time.
Absolutely.
That could be detrimental. Whereas I think in some of them, it can weaken the film as a whole, I think.
This is one of those films.
So like you really did like a full 180, right?
Yeah. Dua Lipa did be speaking truths on what happened with my brain on this film. I kind of split up my notes, so I kind of knew what was going on just a quick glance, as pluses for good things that I enjoyed about the film.
Yeah.
Minuses for things that I did not enjoy about the film, and just bullet points for just things about the film.
I love that.
Significantly more minuses than there are pluses or bullet points. So it's not a good start, is it?
I think it's a fantastic start. I'll be honest. Kick us off. I am intrigued. The fashion surely has to be a plus point.
I didn't even put that down, but yes.
I do want to be dressed in that way the whole time.
To be fair.
Helena Bonham Carter or Brad Pitt, either or.
Exactly. Or both, you know?
At the same time.
Those sunglasses towards the end.
Oh, yeah.
They are iconic.
Truly. Yeah.
So the first, I think, big plus to mention is the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't really take much note of that the first time, but it's really good. Like, surprisingly good.
It slaps, right?
Yeah. Like, I was surprised. It's a film that isn't kind of, like, heavily based around songs that everybody knows or just, like, lyrical songs. Like, the kind of score side of it is great. Let's not talk about the Pixies song at the end yet, because that made me mad.
Really?
Oh, God. We'll come back to that, though.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, that's fair.
So I need to talk spoilers for that.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think like soundtracks though can make or break a film, because some films have soundtracks that are so immediately iconic, and so you hear a song from it, you don't hear that song anymore. You think of that film instead, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think even if it's kind of like a composition, not even like a famous popular song, even if it is your kind of typical movie score, kind of orchestral cinematic piece, there are, I mean, hell, look at like the Avengers music or Game of Thrones theme tune. You can hear that, and it's like you immediately know.
Yeah.
And I do think the score for the film is really, really good, to be fair. Really good.
They did good things.
Yeah, for sure.
With that. If I really like a song and it's in a film, then I just can't pay attention to the film anymore.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Which is hard. And that's why I generally don't listen to movie soundtracks. With the exception of Atomic Blonde, because I watched that film twice in 2 days and then listened to the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, now I'm not paying attention. But, I mean, it's worth it because
the soundtrack. There's a hell of a soundtrack as well. Ooh. It's a hell of a film. Goddamn.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the next plus, just being, like you said, the cast.
Mm.
Is phenomenal. Helena Bonham Carter in that film is phenomenal.
Oh yeah.
Brad Pitt makes you feel like the dirtiest human ever, but it's perfect.
Oh yeah.
In every way.
100%.
Like, I can't praise the cast enough. Meatloaf? Really? Meatloaf. Meatloaf is in this film.
This is it. Like, it's one of those films where it's annoying because the sum of its parts is nowhere near as good as the parts, I don't think.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got Brad Pitt, and I think Brad Pitt is a fantastic actor. I really do. He is, and was, especially at the time in 1999, one of the, he was the Hollywood man, you know?
Absolutely.
It was that kind of 90s era. It was like him, Tom Cruise, Leonardo DiCaprio. They were like the boys.
Yeah.
And, you know, Johnny Depp at that time as well. And to have him opposite someone like Edward Norton, I think is really, really, really interesting casting. I like Edward Norton. I think he's had some shit luck with some films.
Yeah.
But I think he's a really, really good actor. And obviously, Helena Bonham Carter is transcendent. I love her.
Yeah.
Everything she does is just is incredible, I think. It's just an iconic woman. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, the cast is superb.
Yeah, 100%. And they had Helena Bonham Carter being a penguin.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the plus notes. I put penguin plus 10 points. But why, though? Is Helena Bonham Carter a penguin? That literal lifted note from what I wrote down. Anything with a penguin gets bonus points.
This is true, yeah. It's a very valid point, I think. And if she were a penguin, I would not be surprised.
No, no,
no.
No. Just want to pat on the head.
You know? Pat. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you have any other pluses, or is that literally...
I put then it makes you feel dirty.
That is a plus.
It is a grimy, grimy film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But apart from that, I think the rest are negatives. I don't, yeah, I don't that's know if it. Like,
it does create an atmosphere that is very, very engaging. It does kind of enthrall you. You feel very, very involved in the film. It's a very, it's a really cool use of kind of atmosphere and cinematography to create that sense of, like you said, the grimy dirtiness. I do like that. It's a cool vibe, I think, for sure.
Yeah, they even just from the entrance of, I did really enjoy the scene of when they kind of both get introduced into the big house.
Yeah.
And just seeing the conditions of that, it was a lot.
Yeah.
And just seeing the bath when when Brad Pitt's just hanging out in the bath, I'm like, do you really want to be in the bath, you know? And just the general conditions, I really enjoyed. It was great. Yeah.
Very atmospheric, but, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Do you think it does a good job of creating that feeling of, I think grime is like the perfect word.
Mm, yeah.
Now the pleasantries are out of the way. Tell me what you hate about it.
Everything else. do you want to head into spoiler territory yet?
Yeah, I think so. Like, again, it's been out for some time, guys. This is kind of on you at this point. But
yeah,
so from here on out, we kind of tried to stay vague at the start. But there will be spoiler territory now. So if you haven't seen it, close your ears.
And when we're not talking about light ones, I will be ruining the ending.
Cool, love that. There we go.
Just because I cannot physically talk about how much I despise the ending without talking about what it is.
Yeah, that's fair.
So the first thing I think that really makes sense in my notes about what this film is about, I just wrote down man goes punch punch.
True, though?
Thank you for listening to the episode.
Yeah, that's it, guys. We'll see you next time.
Like, who did that? You know?
Yeah. This is it. I think when you boil it down, man goes punch, punch. That's, you know, that's it. And I think the meaning... Oh, here we go. The meaning of the film is completely divorced from the actual meaning of the film. So the meaning of the film that people take away from it, that a lot of, I won't be stereotyping, but a lot of people take away from that film is completely divorced from what Chuck Palahniuk kind of intended in the book, or that the directors of the film intended themselves. It's like a big anti-capitalist, like Tyler Durden gets kind of this rap as an ideal man in terms of masculinity, there we go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, but he's the embodiment of a lot of things that mindset is against.
Yeah.
Like, it's all anti-capitalist. Is he vegan or vegetarian? Like, it's like, or was that Chuck Palahniuk? One of them was. And I'm like, he's just this, the whole point of it is this kind of anti-capitalist manifesto.
Mm.
And no one takes that away from it. Well, not enough people take that away from it, because I know that a lot of people do, but not enough people who idolise that film take that away from it.
Yeah, I think you got to kind of step back from it and say, if you do really enjoy this film, are you idolising the film and enjoying the film, or are you idolising and enjoying Tyler Durden?
I think a really interesting parallel for that, I think, and I'm sure we'll talk about it as well, is American Psycho.
Absolutely.
With like Patrick Bateman, and people always forget that film was like directed by a woman.
Yeah,
which I think that tells you that it's a satire. It's
commentary.
You know, the fact that it, and I think like exactly like you said, are you enjoying the film and its message, or do you just want to be Brad Pitt? Which is totally fair. Like, I get that.
Yeah,
but, yeah, 100%. Yeah,
I had a lot of problems that I wrote down about its messages around masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Within this film, and I don't know how much of it was on purpose or if it's just coming across in a very, very distasteful way.
Yeah,
but the main things that I wrote down about it, I initially had a positive of destroying toxic masculinity within a safe space at the beginning, which was great. I loved that, but then subbed that with, but only when it's in terms of death or dishonesty, because it is in a hospital group that somebody is just entering and kind of disrupting a safe space for his own benefit.
Yeah.
And especially then with the first one being testicular cancer, that kind of help group. But then I continued to go on and say towards the end, like, especially with the scene where they start talking about, I'm gonna take your balls, you're like doing something wrong, like you're not fitting in with our mold of this perfect man that we've created all the way through this cult. Well, yeah, it is a cult. Project Mayhem and Fight Club. We're gonna take away your balls. And is that a reference to the beginning where maybe these people didn't have balls because they've like they literally have had testicular cancer. Like they've had to have that shit removed.
Yeah.
And is that a kind of a direct reference of making fun of that? Is that distasteful or is it a commentary that I don't understand?
Yeah. Kind of thing. 100%. I think that film deals with why am I really struggling to say that word? Masculinity.
Yeah.
In a really, really interesting way, because like Chuck Palahniuk, the book, again, oh my God, broken record. But the book is really, really interesting. Like Chuck Palahniuk's a gay guy who wrote this book. And I think when you kind of read it, knowing that it's written by a gay man, it reads really differently.
Okay.
In a really, really interesting way. And I think, like you said, that kind of element of the emasculation role in masculinity of it's just entirely physical, like the physicality of masculinity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, they're fighting each other. That's like man things, you know, that kind of vibe is really, really interesting. And it's so weird because when you look at Tyler Durden as a character outside of the film, you wouldn't look at him and go, oh, masculine, manly man.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, like in the stereotypical terms. However, in the film, that kind of shifts a lot, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I don't know. He seems to present himself in a way, especially once Fight Club has started and he keeps going into work and his appearance is deteriorating. Like he goes in first time, he's like suited. He looks very presentable, very ready for a workspace environment. And then starts going in with bruises on his face, starts going in with blood on his shirt, stops wearing a tie. Like, what are you trying to prove here? You're not a bigger person because you have... Is it a nonconformist thing?
I don't know. Is it a nonconformist thing? Is it a sticking it to the man? Can it be read in that kind of anti-capitalist sentiment in terms of the kind of arbitrariness of a uniform to do a job? Or is it like a badge of honour? Like, yeah, look at me. I'm a dude. I've been in a fight kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Like, taking sticking it to the man kind of thing, they created, like I mentioned a bit ago, they created their own kind of mold of man, which felt very uncomfortable. Like, one other thing that I put down is that there's like this whole playing God type thing, but is it playing God in kind of like a way of just kind of being a good God and creating new stereotypes? Well, not even creating new stereotypes, just creating good things and safe spaces for men to do things. Mm. Or is it this God complex that you can create a master race of people in the form of Project Mayhem who will serve you? They will put up with anything that you put out. Like, he literally made them stand outside their house for 3 days in order to get into Project Mayhem.
Yeah.
And just withstand abuse. Like, what is that serving?
Mm.
Proving dedication does not need that amount of, like, physicality behind it.
No, 100%. It's just power dynamics, I think, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
It's all about power dynamics. And like you said, making someone stand outside their house for 3 days because you can.
Yeah.
Because you've got something, or you're part of something that they want, you have the power to exert that kind of influence over people. I think what you said was really interesting, actually, about like the whole safe space, because there doesn't really exist a lot of, well, this is okay, I'll try and word this better than I was about to. In terms of a safe space for men, they have the entire world, but also they don't.
Yeah.
So like the fact you've got that group of, you know, when they're dealing with things like testicular cancer, that is a really, really intimate and personal situation where men are allowed to express their feelings and emotions in a way that they're sociologically not seen to be able to do, you know, big air quotes, by the way, around all this, in the real world, you know?
Mm.
And that kind of vulnerability that might get chastised outside in the real world. That is their safe space, and it gets infiltrated by someone to exert a kind of power.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
So I think that's really... It is... There are lots of different... It's this film is not a room that can be entered with one key at all. There are so many different ways of viewing it, I think.
Yeah.
But I do think it gets muddied in the process.
Yeah. 100%. Like you mentioned with the parallel of American Psycho. Like... I don't know. There, like you say, ways to approach it and stuff. I can't find a positive way to approach this.
Yeah.
My partner made the comment of, actually, towards the ending, when you find out that Tyler Durden is just in his head. Mm. Like, she said, do you get around numerous plot holes and just boringness by entering a mental illness into the storyline?
This is... Weirdly enough, I was having this discussion the other day about a film that we recently saw, Same Maud. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah.
Of how mental illness can be really messily used as a plot device, I think, a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be used as... It's weird because it can be used like to explain away inconsistencies. That kind of does a disservice, I think, to people with mental illness. And I think it does a disservice to screenwriting. Like, it's not like a fix-all.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point that she made. Like, can you just be like, oh, well, it was in his head, so it doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Or is it just an inconsistent storyline?
Yeah, where you got to the end and was just like, oh, maybe. We could just pop that in there.
And it was all a dream. It's like that, right?
It has that mood. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Which is... it's stupid.
This is it, like... It's, I think... With some stuff like that, there are some instances of the massive plot twist of this wasn't real really, really, really working. Look at, like, potential spoiler for a film here. Look at The Truman Show.
Right, like, yeah, sure.
The first time you see that film, if you don't know what it's about, I think because you can go back and you can spot all of the little things that like you can spot where different cameras are hidden.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in this one, I think the whole, and it was one in his head, you can go back and be like, but why is that? That doesn't make sense. Why?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Instead of rewatching from a positive, oh, that's why that happened. It's still like, but why has that happened?
Yeah.
You know?
I think the biggest thing that I wrote down about that was, you know, the first fight scene when they come out of the bar together?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Who, right, hear me out. Who in their right mind... came outside of the bar, saw the character, the narrator, Tyler Durden, beating himself up and respected him enough to be like, you know what? Yeah, let's start a fight club. Let's respect that man. He will be our leader. He was just literally beating himself up. Not in a metaphorical way. He was flying around.
Physically. Yeah.
Like, because you see, especially towards the end, when they're in the car park.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah, and you see, like, all the CCTV shots of him just flinging himself down the stairs, getting dragged along the floor. Who saw that man outside the pub and thought, yeah.
Aspirational figure.
He is the man that will inevitably lead us to build up numerous, blow up numerous buildings at the end of the film. Who?
It's a superiority complex, I guess. It's like everyone wants to believe that they're going to be a savior, that they're going to be the person to affect this big change. But you're not a lot of people. Sorry if that just shattered your dreams there. A lot of people. But, like, I don't know if it's that. Is it that? Because when you break it down and look at it from that step away, like, he was literally just, like, throwing hands at himself, you know?
Don't get it.
Because in the moment, you're like, oh, yeah, this is, like, you know, action-packed, beating people up. You take a step back when it's all in his head, and you're like, was it... Because you could question, you know, is it the physically he's doing this? Or is it like a mental concept of like, there are two wolves that live inside me? And you know, like, that... you know? But then you've literally got the CCTV footage of him physically doing it. You're like, okay, so it's not like a mental allegory for mental illness and the struggle. It's literally some guy throwing himself around in a car, in like a parking lot or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think it had more potential when it was metaphorical, and I feel like they should have kept it as them two physically fighting each other and not just kind of taking Tyler out to be like, actually, no. Now it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's a really fair point, yeah.
Like, it proper got to me.
Mm.
I don't like things that don't make sense.
That's fair, understandable.
And that is a big one. Like, with films, like, I find it difficult. If I can't get into the plot, like, I mean, physically find a way where it is plausible for the plot to exist.
Yeah.
So Terminator I had a bit of a problem with, because how did they get into the cycle, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. And this, it doesn't make sense that this community was created on kind of a form of self-harm.
Well, yeah, right. And it's the glorification thereof that his community is kind of peddling, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
You'd see, because, like, if it was set in some kind of, like, dystopia, because I think a lot of that you can get away with if it's not set in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, if it's kind of, like... So, in Terminator, there's probably some, like, made-up science word. It's like, oh, it's because of the quantum vortex or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't count. I don't know. But, like, it's very much, like, a real-world gritty film, this.
Yeah.
So how... Well, so how?
You don't know. I put a negative of tries to be self-aware. Oh. It tries.
Savage.
It tries. Does it achieve it? No.
Oh.
I'm not convinced.
I think there's a whole subgenre of films that have this self-awareness aspect to them that like pat themselves on the back for being clever, you know? Mm. Oh, I'm really self-aware. I'm really clever. I did this in a really interesting way. And sometimes it really, really works. Because when that's done properly in a film, it's like, oh, nice, yes, keep doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes if it doesn't land, it just is so aggravating. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
And it very much, for me personally, makes me dislike the film, because it feels like it's a contest between you and this piece of media that's like, who's more clever, me or you? And I'm like, please, no. Uh-huh. You know, is that me being, like, petty and
showing
my insecurities?
Absolutely not. My partner also said that it made her feel stupid.
Yes, don't do that to me.
No, because, like...
She's not stupid, by the way, she's very intelligent.
No, she is a very smart lady. Yeah, props to her. She gets things good, but this was just not one that she enjoyed. She said that she wants to sit back and turn off and enjoy the film and not have to think too hard when watching and when it makes certain references. Like,
yeah,
the main thing, again, that I wrote down, why was this a thing, right? The third person references two body parts. I am Jack's broken heart. Shut up.
Stop that. Yeah.
Like, you literally had a 30-second scene where he's like, oh, I just found a pile of books that say that I am Jack's conscience. Is it relevant? No. No, it's not. Now, you reference that throughout the entire film. If you've forgotten about that 30-second scene, these things make no sense and are not explained. That makes, in my opinion, that makes the watcher, the consumer, feel stupid, because you're not in on the joke. It's not explained to you. It isn't even a joke. Is it relevant? No. Like,
yeah, no, that's a really good point. If it makes you feel like, oh, you stop paying attention for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You fucking idiot. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
And the thing is, as well, like, it's a film, I think it goes even further, because not only does the film make you feel, if you don't understand it, then you don't understand cinema. Maybe read a book. But, like, a lot, not all, I hasten to add, not all, but there's a good portion of the fan base for this film who will also do their very, very best to make you feel stupid or uneducated in film for not liking it.
Yep, 100%. You
know? And that winds me up, because like I said, self-awareness and stuff in film and intelligent cinema is, I love it. But then there are some people that just go whoop the opposite way.
Yep.
And can somehow get away with it. Christopher Nolan. But you know what I mean? And like, why is there free passes for these things sometimes? Just to me, call me stupid. Call me an artless fool who does not understand the concept of cinema and cinematography. A story supposed to make sense?
Evidently not.
Well, yeah, you know?
Yeah. Like...
And even if it's got twists and turns and whatever, you're supposed to be able to follow it. Otherwise, you're bad at telling stories. It's supposed to make sense. Otherwise, you're bad at telling stories.
Like, my mate pointed out, because we all watched it together on Zoom, he pointed out the standpoint of, well, he brought in David Lynch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do love David Lynch, even though I just said all that. I do love him.
Right? So that's the thing. Like, let's talk Mulholland Drive for a second. I think that's probably going to be the easiest route into it. Mm-hmm. Like, that film, although it is borderline nonsensical, it doesn't make you feel stupid for not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
But you feel what's going on, yeah, kind of thing. Like, the one scene where the lady is singing in Spanish. Mm. That made me feel a lot. And I didn't know what was going on. Did I need to know? Was it relevant? Yeah. I think so. Yeah, I would absolutely say that that was a needed scene in the film. Did I get that with any of Fight Club? No. Is it that I didn't understand it? Quite possibly. Maybe I overlooked a lot of it. But is it a case of overlooking it, or is it a case of it being so underexplained that I don't care to look into it?
That's a very important distinction, I think. Yeah. Because, you know, if you're telling the story, it's your job to, if you're making something deliberately ambiguous, deliberately vague, you've still got to make it interesting enough that people want to find out about it.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't do that, then people aren't going to care about, exactly like you said, aren't going to care to look into it. And then you've lost that element of your story. And if that's something that you're relying on or going to keep referencing, then that becomes an issue, I think. Like, again, David Lynch, I'm a massive, massive Twin Peaks fan. I love Twin Peaks. And the thing is, there's stuff in there that, by all accounts, it doesn't make you feel stupid because you know that nobody else understands what's happening either. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff in it that you just take as like, okay, that makes sense. It doesn't, but it, in that universe, it's made to be a given almost. So you're like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, stupid things. Like, initially, that lady's just having a chat with a log. And you're like, okay, that's just what she does, I guess. And it's just, it's in this kind of world where there's a lot of other stuff that is quite vague and ambiguous, and you get the atmosphere of this really unusual world. Whereas, so you're intrigued enough to keep being like, okay, well, maybe this can tie into this, but if you don't flesh out enough or get that hook in it,
yeah,
like you said, you can lose it, you know?
Yeah, easily. I just don't understand this. From what you just said then, it kind of makes me feel like, you know, in the most recent episode of Drag Race, and this isn't a very, very specific quote, like, people, I hope people will understand what I'm on about with this, but this is a reference.
I'm really intrigued to see how this ties into Fight Club and Twin Peaks. Okay, yeah, cool.
When RuPaul came in to the workroom and said, oh, it's like this person, all the people who were in the workroom laughed. 5 minutes later, RuPaul was just like, do you know who this person is? And they were all like, no.
Yeah, right.
Why did you laugh then?
What? Yeah.
Were you told to laugh by somebody else?
Someone with cardboard saying, laugh now. Like,
exactly. Kind of thing. And I feel like that's what I'm getting with Fight Club, and like the hype around it from my kind of interpretation of the film is that, have people just learnt to love this film as a cult classic? Because I want to talk to somebody who loves this film and see what they say about it, because tell me it's redeeming factors. Argue with both of us on this, because we're
not here just to slam things. Like, this is what we think. If we... Don't be an asshole, but like, tell us why you think it's great. Tell us why, what about this film makes it, like you said, a cult classic.
Yeah, I think it's important that, like, I believe that we are two people who value having rounded opinions on things.
100%.
And we're not just slamming stuff for the sake of it, like you say. Like, these are our opinions, but we want to understand. Because right now I'm not understanding what everyone loves about this film. And I feel like it definitely is a certain demographic that do enjoy this film.
100%, yeah.
And we are not in that. But I feel like if it is such a cult classic, then anyone from any demographic should be able to understand it to at least a point of enjoyment.
100%. Like, I think in the last episode we spoke about, like, films that we really don't like, and for every single one on my list I can understand why, like, what its redeeming factors are. Prime example, because it's the most controversial one, I really don't like Blade Runner 2049. Personally, my opinion, I can list to you all the reasons why that's a good film.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you that, and I know that. I know, kind of technically speaking, why that's a good film. I just didn't vibe with it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas for some things, I'm like, no, I don't understand. I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know? And at the risk of an influx of people being like, it's stupid, I don't understand cinema. Like, you know. Maybe, who knows? But maybe. They don't let anyone have a podcast these days, so
it is true.
Yeah. But I think it's really interesting because a lot of these films, exactly like you said, are just taken as a given, as like classics.
Yeah.
Taken as a given of this is a fantastic film. And if you don't think so, then you're wrong.
Yep.
And that's not how opinions work. Like, film inherently is very, very, very subjective.
Absolutely.
There's so much stuff that I love and you don't like.
Exactly.
And that you love and I don't like.
Mm.
And that's kind of the beauty of art.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got philosophical. What else do you hate about it?
Okay.
Or any other general observations from your bullet point list? Because I'm very intrigued to know, like, general thoughts and feelings about this film.
So, my first bullet point, skipping back right to the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth wall breaks within the kind of narration side of what does he do for work? Did I need to know that he pissed in the gravy? Did I need to know that he came in the clam chowder? No. Why was that relevant? Also, why was he breaking the fourth wall like that? Was that supposed to be a hint that it was a narrator? Because he's credited in the film as the narrator.
Yeah.
Every time I hit pause on Amazon Prime, like, it comes up with that little bar of who the characters are.
Yeah.
And it says narrator, and in the subtitles, whenever he's talking, it says narrator.
Mm.
Was I supposed to be smart enough to pick up that for that to make sense or not? I don't know.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm a sucker for a fourth wall break, man. I love it. Yeah,
absolutely.
I love it. I quite like that element. Here we go. Controversial. Okay. I quite like it because, like you say, I think it does have that element of kind of leading you into, wait, why is that happening? Why is he doing that? Is there something, like... Are we in on this? Are we supposed to figure something out? I think I quite like that. So that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Fourth wall breaking, when it goes well, is like, I just love it. It's one of my favourite things. Mm. If it's done right. If it's done wrong, it can be really, like, off-putting.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Cats, the recent iteration of it.
I stayed far away from that.
Good idea and bad idea at the same time. There's a bit at the end where, like, the Judi Dench cat looks, like, directly into the camera, and it's wildly uncomfortable.
Right.
And I hated it for so many reasons. And I'm like, no, don't do that ever again.
Mm.
But when it's done right, I think it can be so effective. And I think I think that bit I actually quite like, because I think it is, like you said, dropping little hints and tidbits to, wait, so is he... saying that to us? Is he saying that to himself? Is he... Because God knows I've got an internal monologue constantly. It's very frustrating. And I think it's a really interesting element, that.
Okay.
Personally.
I feel like the only takeaway I personally got from that little bit is, again, making you feel a little bit stupid for maybe tuning out for 10 seconds, when they made the off comment, you don't need to say what we did in the clam chowder. Fast forward maybe an hour and 20 minutes into the film, where Helena Bonham Carter and the narrator are in a cafe together, and she asks for the clam chowder, and he goes to the waiter, oh, I want clean food. And he's like, oh, I'd advise against the clam chowder then. Like
a callback, yeah.
Yeah, like I say, that was the only takeaway that I got from that bit, is that they were setting up a joke way, way, way far in the future of the film.
Yeah.
You know?
And it shows he's got very poor food hygiene standards, I think, as well, which is something we should remember.
Yeah. Yeah, why would you do that?
I've never had the desire to know, to be honest.
No. Maybe it was part of the God complex. He can do what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
I don't know. But that irritated me.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
So that's a really fair point. But I know you said before that you wanted to kind of... And we've gotten to the end now. So if you really, really, really want to avoid spoilers, we are about to ruin the entire ending of the film. So
yeah.
Before we finish the podcast, we are about to ruin the entire ending. So turn off now if you haven't seen it and you want to see it without it being completely spoiled for you. If you've already seen it, buckle your seatbelts, okay? Because I know that you've got opinions on this.
Yeah.
So
the ending. he's found out that Tyler Durden is in his head. He is Tyler Durden. He's been to all the places that Tyler Durden has been on the plane tickets. He's found out all the locations of the buildings. He's figuring out what's going on there. This is making you like, oh my god, look at all this.
Yeah, like, mind blown. Wow.
Literally. Yeah. And then he goes and turns off the timer in the van in the building that he's going into, and then figures out there's a big old bunch of bathtubs of nitroglycerin in a bunch of other buildings across the city. He's shot himself in the face to get rid of Tyler Durden. They're bringing Helena Bonham Carter up the stairs. She's wriggling out of the way. She's like, oh my god, what happened to your face? Ah. And then
just like that as well. That was a very good impression, I think. Thank you. It was like she was here.
To be fair, I take pride in my impressions. They will be coming back.
I should hope so.
And then, skip forward a little bit, they link hands, they look out the window across the city as all the buildings are blowing up and falling around them. And then the Pixies start playing. What?
Do you not like the Pixies?
I enjoy that song as much as the next person.
Yeah.
How did that scene fit into the film?
Yeah.
I wrote down, supposed poetic ending? Question mark.
Yeah.
With the Pixies and his world falling apart? Question mark.
Oh.
Is it supposed to be a metaphorical ending that is touching and emotional? Because you're like, wow.
Yeah.
His plan worked.
Yeah.
He's blown up so many buildings.
Good for you, buddy. Yeah, like, is it, you know, the crumbling vestiges of his mind? Where is his mind? I don't know. Maybe the Pixies can tell us. kind of falling apart, and that's a fully fledged mental break. Or, yeah, it could be. I mean, I think there's a few ways to read it.
Yeah.
You sound less.
Any in a good light?
Oh! I think, yeah, is it like a big allegory? A big metaphor?
Yep.
Is it a laboured one? Potentially.
Yeah, I feel like it just left me with a sigh. I don't know, that grated on me. Even the soundtrack itself, like we said right at the beginning, the soundtrack is great.
Yeah.
Like, phenomenal, the score, great. And then you play the Pixies, which is completely out of place.
Don't get me wrong, I love the Pixies and I really like that song.
Yeah.
It's whether the coherency of the film allows for that song to be part of it. Is it quite a jarring inclusion in that sense, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, yeah. I don't feel like it was an appropriate ending for the film.
Oh, interesting. How would you have preferred the film to end? Don't say any other way.
'Cause 2 hours earlier?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It just felt jarring and uncomfortable. But not in a good way of like, ooh, I feel dirty and great that the film's ended. It's like, wow, that was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Get right.
Yeah. For some buildings to explode.
I think there's definitely a thing in films in case of, like, not wasted potential necessarily, but, like, you could have gone another way that I think might have been more rewarding, both for the characters and the viewer.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the time you can feel like characters have been cheated out of their ending in a big way. And I don't know, it's... I didn't have as many problems with the ending.
Okay, sure.
Which is weird, I think, because now you're saying all this, I'm like, wait... Do I hate it? Like, when I watched it, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. It's like, metaphor. But yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, but again, I don't know a lot about the genre. This is just my opinion from watching it after coming from a background that isn't these kind of films. I don't know. I don't even know what genre you'd put this under, to be fair.
Psychological drama / action, maybe?
Sure. I don't know.
What would you? I'm intrigued. I'm gonna have a look what the internet says about that. Okay. What genre? Because I would say it's definitely got elements of like psychological drama in it for sure.
Yeah.
But then again, I think you can't deny that there's action elements, can you? You know.
Yeah. Like.
I mean, they're literally beating each other up the whole time. That's like the point of the film.
Mm.
Drama thriller. It's classed as.
Okay. Yeah.
I can kind of see that. I can vibe with that. I can see that.
Yeah, but yeah, I know nothing about the genre. I don't know how it's supposed to be. This is very much an introduction film kind of to this genre. As with a lot of the films that I think we're going to talk about, is going to be, I'm clueless, but here is what I think, kind of thing.
She's not clueless. She's selling herself short there. She's very insightful and very, very wise. But I think it's really interesting because if it's not a genre that you're super invested in, there are obviously certain tropes in different genres that are applied in different ways. Like, if we're going to talk about horror, you are like, you have an encyclopedic knowledge of stuff like that. So I'm really excited to talk about some horror films with you, which we inevitably will.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some stuff that's kind of taken for granted almost in certain genres of like, oh, that's just how it is. You know, the dream within a dream. It was all in its head. You know, that's a big thing in the whole like psychological drama situation.
Sure.
And there are loads of films I could reel off with that, but in doing so, I would completely ruin the end of the film if you hadn't seen it. You know? So the fact that even now, without having seen loads of these films, you can already be like, that's really derivative.
Mm.
Is that not telling of the trope? Maybe that should have been in our worst tropes list.
Maybe it is.
You know?
Maybe this is a bonus.
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting. Because even without being super au fait with the genre, you can still pick up on good and bad screenwriting. Like, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
With that ending,
yeah,
I think that might be it from us, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
No, have you got anything else you want to add?
Apart from the fact that I recently bought an exfoliator bar from Glossier that looked exactly like the pink soap, that made me really happy. Really enjoyed that. No, I think, again, as we said before, this is just our opinions on it. There are some really great parts about this film, and we did speak about them to start with. And there are scenes from this film, and there are parts of this film, and there are definitely quotes from this film that are incredible and really, really iconic. But I think the reason that this made it into our hot takes list is because it is kind of one of those films that, oh, you haven't seen Fight Club? What the fuck have you not seen Fight Club? You didn't like Fight Club. What? You didn't understand it. And I think I take issue with that view anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's why it made it onto the list, because there are parts of it, glaringly obvious parts of it, that aren't necessarily coherent or sensical in any way, you know? They're kind of brushed over. Again, like I said, some films are given like a bit of a free pass to do certain things.
Yep.
And I feel like this is one of them.
100%. Yep, I agree with that.
Yeah. So that has been our hot take on our coffee break about Fight Club.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, if you want to fight us about it, please do. Send us a message. Person. No, not in, well, we can't do that anyway. Please stay 2 meters away from us at all times.
100%.
And everyone else.
Yes.
But yeah, no, send us messages, comment where you can, tell us why you think we're wrong, but we will tell you that it is an opinion.
Yeah.
So try it.
Let us know why you like this film. Let us know why this film holds such a special place in your heart, because I know I can go through my Twitter followers now who follow us on Twitter, and I know there are people in there who are going to be fuming at me that I've said nothing bad about this film. And I would love to know why it's really special to you, why you love it. I'd also like to know if there's anybody out there who agrees with us. Make us feel a little bit better.
We'll make a Fight Club hate group. No.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see the kind of split of opinion in people between who agrees with us and who completely disagrees with us and who's kind of on the fence. Mm. So,
I'm excited.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure and a joy.
As always.
As always. I'll pop any and all links in the description to the episode for social media and what have you. And we will see you next time for our next hot take on our next film. And we'll have fancier coffee next time too.
Maybe.
Amazing. Right, well, thank you for listening, and we'll see you later. I'm keeping that in, by the way.
Cool.